Guitarathon is the greatest guitar sale on earth, and it's happening now. Get massive savings on a huge selection of electric and acoustic guitars, basses, amps, pedals, and other accessories. Get select Ernie Ball strings, 3 for $10. Save $100 on a Fender Special Edition Strat, or get a Yamaha acoustic for just $199. Plus, get special financing on select major brands. Don't miss these incredible deals. Available online and in-store, now through November 1st. Guitarathon, only at Guitar Center. Find your sound.
You are Locked On Pelicans, your daily podcast on the New Orleans Pelicans, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to another edition of Locked On Pelicans. I'm your host, Jake Madison, at NolaJake on Twitter, also a writer over at bourbonstreetshots.com, coming to you this Thursday, day after the Pelicans have a pretty bad home loss, is sugarcoating it. With a 127-94 loss to the Utah Jazz at home in the Smoothie King Center, their final home game until after the All-Star break. I think the next one is going to be Muses Thursday, which likely with how bad this team is right now and this loss tonight, then going on the road playing some tough teams isn't exactly probably going to get a lot of fans out there on one of the bigger parade nights during Mardi Gras. So I'm going to recap this game for you guys here today on Locked On Pelicans. Also want to talk a little bit about the team building approaches that these two franchises have had and maybe compare them to each other a little bit. That was kind of a topic after the game. I don't know if the Jazz are the best comparison for building through the draft, though they certainly have done that. I want to talk a little bit about that, talk about how the CBA kind of forces you now to build some teams. So we're going to have all that and more in today's edition of Locked On Pelicans. Also, did you guys hear the awesome theme music that I've had on Locked On Pelicans for a little while now? That is from a local indie band called Vox and the Hound. And actually, this Friday, tomorrow, they're going to be having a single release party over at Gasa Gasa on Ferret Street. I think doors open at 9, show is at 10. I'm going to be there. I'm feeling much better to actually venture outside of my house, my apartment, and not just live there and go to the Smoothie King Center. So 9 o'clock is when the doors open. The show is at 10. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'll be there. Come by. Listen to some awesome local music. Support local acts. Always a good thing. And if you see me there, come talk some Pelicans. I'm always down to talk with the listeners, Twitter followers, readers of the website. It's going to be a lot of fun. So Gasa Gasa this Friday at 9 p.m. Now, before we talk about the Pelicans game, and there's not exactly a great deal to talk about from it. Frankly, the Jazz are just head and shoulders better than the Pelicans. But I do want to mention about going to games and different things like that. You know, buying tickets online has for a while now been kind of a difficult process, whether it's fees and, you know, not finding the best seats, not knowing if it's a good deal you're getting. It always sometimes is a bit of a crapshoot. But SeatGeek is a bit different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets to sporting events, concerts, whatever it is. I've talked about them before on here, and I use it personally. I went to the Sugar Bowl getting tickets. I've gone to tons of Saints games this year. Almost the goal was to kind of go to all of them. That fell apart. But I was there for sure at the Monday night game, the anniversary of the Gleason block, the reopening of the Superdome. Managed to go there for dirt cheap because of SeatGeek. You know, it's always the first place I go to look for tickets. I have the app on my phone, and I used it the other day to, you know, had some friends who were interested in Pelicans tickets, told them to go there, took a quick look for them, found some great seats down in the lower bowl form. You know, it does price comparisons for you. It gives you a grade on whether these tickets are a good deal or not. You guys work hard for your money. You want to make sure you're getting the best seats possible. You know, the most bang for your buck. And what's the, you know, one of the best parts of all here is listeners of Locked On Pelicans actually get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get the $20 rebate, all you have to do is just go download the SeatGeek app from the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, wherever it is. Go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter the promo code LO Pelicans, as in Locked On Pelicans. L.O. Pelicans, and after you make your first purchase, SeatGeek's going to send you $20 in the mail. Use it for concessions or whatever. It's a great little rebate, more bang for your buck for a game you want to go to already. Like I said, you can use it for Saints tickets, Pelicans tickets. It's great if you've got a bachelor party and you need to get a big group together. You can find tickets all together. You're all going to have a great time. And you're getting some money back in the process. So download the SeatGeek app today. Enter the promo code LOPELICANS and get in on any action in any game or concert you want to. Nothing like being there live, even if it's to see your team lose. It's still a lot of fun. You get to see some awesome Anthony Davis lobs, put back dunks, some great plays overall. You know, it's fun to watch on TV, but there's nothing better than being there in person. So don't forget the promo code of LOPELICANS. So I said on yesterday's podcast, this was going to be a bit of a tough game for the Pels. I was on the radio down here in New Orleans doing an interview yesterday around noon as well. And I said, this isn't going to be a good one. And I had a few people asking me about the spread ahead of time of 3.5 points. And I said, giving up the points, taking the -3.5 looked pretty good. Well, definitely called that one with a 127-94 loss. You know, Utah did exactly what they wanted to do in this game. They showed they're a better team, better coached overall, the talent level more. Didn't help that Tyreke Evans was out for the Pelicans. He actually would have helped, not a great bit tonight, but maybe a little bit. But, you know, basically you can kind of just look at the box score if you didn't watch it on TV, if you weren't in the Smoothie King Center, and you know exactly what happened. You know, Utah's got a lot of length. They're a tall team with Rudy Gobert down low, holding it down Derek Favors as well. Utah started off with Favors guarding Anthony Davis, but you saw them try and get Gobert onto him as well. Davis has struggled against Gobert in his career, and Gobert limited him. At one point, you know, he really only had 4 points. Davis on the night kind of woke up a bit in the second half, but he only finished with 12 points. Only got to the free throw line 5 times, only grabbed 10 rebounds, as the Pelicans were just beaten soundly all around by the Utah Jazz. Points in the paint, Utah put up 58, Pelicans only had 46. Anytime they really went inside, they struggled with Gobert blocking shots away, swatting them away. Davis was largely ineffective down low with Gobert blocking a few of his. Though on the flip side, Davis did have 6 blocks. Looked a bit better on defense, but there was at one point, it I think was in the third quarter, I'm forgetting the exact time, I'm going to try and get a video of it because I kind of want to break it down. Utah ran some off-ball movement, which they were doing all night. They like a slow half-court style of play where people are running around, and they use that to create the most efficient shot for them. You know, the shot attempt isn't really on the first or second action of a play for them. It's on the fourth, fifth, or sixth where they have so many people running around doing pre-screens, double pre-screens, things like that, just creating mismatches, getting the right opportunity they want. They'll use most of the 24-second shot clock, but that time they are going to shoot, it's going to be an efficient, high-percentage look for them. And, you know, Davis kind of got lost on defense at one point, was stuck in no man's land, and got called for a defensive 3-second call, giving, you know, the ball back to the Jazz while also giving them a technical free throw. You know, Utah grabbed more offensive rebounds than the Pelicans, more defensive rebounds than the Pelicans. They had, you know, they're a slow offense, but they had 17 fast break points, largely because the Pels turned it over 13 times. And a lot of those times they're live ball turnovers, which I'm sure you've heard mentioned by me on here and on the broadcast before. Those turnovers don't go just out of bounds and you got to inbound the ball. It goes right to a Utah Jazz player or an opponent player. They run down, hit a three, or get a good look at the rim, or the Pels have to foul them because there's nothing else they can do. The Pels tried to play a bit in the fast break. They did have 18 fast break points, which is a pretty decent number. I think it's the Warriors who are tops in the league in that, obviously, and they have about 26 a game, so they're only 8 behind that. Though the Pels did go with the big lineup, like I said, they probably were, with Davis and Terrence Jones manning the front line, Solomon Hill at the 3, Buddy Hield, and then Jrue Holiday in the backcourt. But they weren't going to win this game if they were forced to play a slow-paced game, play, you know, in the half-court offense. It wasn't going to work for the Pelicans, and that's what Utah forced them to do. They just dictated the style of play they wanted, and it plays to their strengths and their advantages, and it's not really how the Pels want to play. And, you know, it leads to, you know, at one point the biggest lead for Utah was 39 points. Ended up winning 127-94. Not not a good victory or not a good loss for the Pels. This is pretty bad. It shows you, you know, they're sixth worst team in the league right now. They're so far out of contention with this roster and the way they play. They weren't, you know, they spent more time on the perimeter. They had Terrence Jones driving into the paint at times. Drew Holiday was getting it going early, but kind of backed off when he wasn't really getting much help overall. The Jazz were cutting through the lane. Tons of screens, off ball, on ball for them. Moving without the ball. And Pels don't do much of that. You've heard him say, we're so much better when we move the ball on offense. But they know they need to do this and still can't. And that's a problem. That's a problem with the coaching staff. That's a problem with the players just being unable to do it, forcing isolation. Defensively, Pels, not too great. Solomon Hill didn't have a great defensive game either. He's, you know, their best perimeter defender. It was, and I'm looking at the NBA.com stats website right now here at the box score. I'm counting it out loud here for you guys. How many players in double figures for the Jazz? We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 guys in double figures. You also had another guy with 8. So close to a ton of people in double figures. Pels only had, they had 5, which is good, but they're low double figure numbers. Tim Frazier getting a bunch of minutes because Tyreke Evans was out, had 11. Etuan Moore had 13. Drew Holiday only had 15 after having been streaking a little bit. You had Anthony Davis with just 12. Terrence Jones was the game high with 21. They're not going to win many games if this is the case. They need some better help. Dante Cunningham only had 4 points, but he healed with just 8. Solomon Hill had 1 made 3. Only took 3 shot attempts the entire game. All from deep, at least. But he was 1 of 3, and that's it. Utah shot on the night 54.5% from the field, 43.8%. They were 14 of 32 from deep. Like I said, the rebounding advantage compared to the Pels, they had 11 more total. Pels only had 30 defensive rebounds, partially because shots were going in for Utah. Basically just had no answer, and they kind of just got run out of there a little bit in their own, you know, their home's arena. They needed to win this before going on the road. They only have 3 home games in February, and this is one you really got to try and get there. You know, they're 500 at home. They're worse on the road. Going on the road for a bit of a swing isn't going to be good for the playoffs, and I think you can probably call it at this point that, yeah, playoffs are, you know, just out of reach for this team. So I don't want to spend too much time on this loss, frankly, because, you know, if you'd listen to Alvin Gentry postgame, if you'd listen to the other players postgame, most of the guys were just more saying Utah played really well, and that was it. It's the truth. They just played better than the Pelicans. They're a better team than the Pelicans. They're 4th in the Western Conference. They're going to get some home court games in the playoffs, it looks like. And it's a team you're not exactly going to be excited about playing in the second round of the playoffs, potentially a Western Conference Finals if things break their way. They've got a lot of talent out there, and they're coached well. They have an identity, which is defense and playing in the half court. Now, a lot of the talk after the game was kind of contrasting these two franchises and how they built the teams, with a lot of talk being that, you know, the Jazz have built through the draft. And I don't know if that's the most apt comparison, partially because, you know, the Jazz have whiffed on a bunch of players. They've missed the playoffs 4 years in a row before looking like they're going to get in this year. They whiffed on Cantor, who ended up being an okay player. He's not tremendous by any means, but he's doing well for another franchise. And then kind of lucked into Rudy Gobert becoming the player that he is. I don't think that was something anyone expected, to see the Stifle Tower being built. Nah, that was bad. Developing like he has. That, you know, Exum hasn't been the best for them. They completely missed on Trey Burke, who, if you recall, was in that draft where the Pelicans looked like they were going to draft him in 5 or 6. I forget. It was where they traded their pick away, which was what became of Nerlens Noel to Philly in the Drew Holiday trade there. So not always, you know, again, not exactly the best, but, you know, again, they have some guys they've built through the draft. Derek Favors came over in that Deron Williams trade. They finally have a lot of, you know, young talent in Joe Ingles, Gobert. They had to trade a first round pick though for a point guard in George Hill, and that's worked out. So it's one of those things where you look at it, they kind of did what the Pelicans wanted to do. They just hit on more of it. They hit on Gobert. They hit on the trade that brought them their point guard, something the Pelicans also did. And they've gotten lucky with a lot of the guys they've put around, getting Joe Johnson on the cheap, Boris Diaw. You know, so I don't know if it's the most apt comparison to say, you know, the Pels should have done this. There's a lot of luck when it comes to building your team. You got to hit on draft picks. You got to hit on the right trades. Pels have tried to make those moves. They've just kind of struck out on them. But it's still kind of fundamentally the same approach that the Jazz have taken. Jazz just got luck, not necessarily got lucky, part of that scouting and other things too. But you guys get where I'm kind of going with it. That being said, though, there's a reason you're not hearing about them trading that 2017 pick. And when the rumors broke the other day about Jahlil Okafor or Derek Favors, that would be a pipe dream. Brook Lopez, I don't know how I got those two confused. Nikola Vucevic, all of those guys, you know, it doesn't sound like the 2017 picks being included, partially because it's a very strong draft. Part of it is if you fire Dell Demps, you're not going to get a great GM in here if you give up an asset. The first big decision that GM is going to make is when it comes to the draft and that 2017 pick, you at least want him to have the option of trading it or using it. And it's a very good draft. Also, with it being a very good draft, you know, with the new CBA, and I talked about this a few weeks back, drafting's way more important. You do have to build through the draft. And if you don't hit on those picks, it might condemn you to misery and failure and lottery or worse, mediocrity, not making the playoffs, not really getting a high lottery pick. But those guys aren't going to hit the market really anymore. To leave a team, basically, if you're a max free agent kind of that's been drafted by your team, you're giving up like between $60 and $90 million. You have to really, really want out to give up that kind of money. Should give the Pels fans hope about Anthony Davis, but you know, you have to give up a lot of money to leave the team. So you're going to see fewer top free agents hitting the market in the future, which means, you know, if you're trying to build through free agency, it's not going to work. You're going to need to draft well. Smart teams should be investing more resources into college scouting, European scouting, just draft scouting in general. And the Pels need to keep that 2017 pick at all costs because this is a strong draft. I haven't, you know, really looked into it yet. I always tell people this when they ask me. I do not watch a lot of college throughout the year. I really watch so little because I watch so much NBA and I find it just awful by comparison. I watch the tournament because the tournament's fantastic. And I'll start scouting players around when we know, after a little bit after the draft lottery, when we know where we know the Pelicans are going to be drafting. But keeping that 2017 pick is vitally important, and hitting on it and making the most out of that player and getting a good guy who's not a bust is going to be even greater. That's how you're going to see teams win championships once this kind of current crop of top stars starts retiring and leaving and hitting the backsides of their career. Overall, not a good night for the Pelicans, though. Like I said, 127-94 loss. Utah was just better than them. All of the Pelicans in the locker room after were calling them a great team. Not really down about how they played, though. They did not play well. More just complimentary of the Jazz, and I think they just kind of realized this wasn't a game they were supposed to win, weren't going to win, though it was a game they probably needed to win. So moving on from that. I think that'll wrap it up here on Locked On Pelicans today. Tomorrow, I'll preview the Minnesota game for you guys, get you set for the weekend. They play the Minnesota tomorrow. They got the Kings on Sunday as they get on the road for a little bit in some games. That, you know, these are teams they're competing against for that eighth seed. Gotta get some wins. Otherwise, you really need to start tanking. Make sure this draft pick they're going to hopefully keep is going to be as high as possible. So thank you all for listening. Gasa Gasa tomorrow, 9 o'clock. I will be there listening to Vox and the Hound, the awesome guys who provided the music for this podcast. I've got some other songs I want to kind of get in here, maybe mix up a bit of a rotation. Should be a lot of fun. Come talk Pels, listen to some awesome music, support local bands. It is always a great thing. Also, the venue is a pretty cool location as well. So thank you all for listening, and I'll be back with you guys tomorrow.